Blog Talk Radio.
Just off of the beaten path, a little dot on State Road 9. That's where I was born and where I'll die. Things move at a slower pace, nobody's in the rat race, and these days that's a special way of life. Down home, where they know you by name and treat you like family. Down home, a man's good word and a handshake are all you need. Folks know, if they're falling on hard times, they can fall back home. Those of us raised up down home.
Let's go, girls.
Okay. morning, everyone, and welcome to Women Patriots. I don't have a big, long narrative tonight. I was running some things through my head today, but I was actually standing outside a precinct polling place most of the day for Richard Murdoch. And the big news of the evening is Richard Murdoch has beat a six-term Republican, Richard Lugar, and for the Senate race here in Indiana. And I'm going to tell you what, don't buy the spin. They're out there trying to, Senator Lugar's trying to spin it that it was the super PACs. And no, it wasn't, folks. It was boots on the ground because I was part of that organization and we were going door to door. We had the Tea Party here active and we had even the campaign door to door handing out literature. And we are indeed alive and well in Indiana, and don't let them tell you the Democrats are going to win in the fall, because this is Indiana, and the first time we went blue was in 2008, and I suspect there was a little help in that victory for Obama. So let me bring my co-host Billy Cotter on. Hey, Billy, how are you tonight?
Hi, everyone. I'm doing okay. I'm just kind of anxious to see what happens in North Carolina and all these other states that are voting tonight.
Yeah, they have that marriage amendment, the constitutional amendment to the North Carolina constitution on the ballot. And at this point in time, they've got for it is 664,000 and against is 436,000. So they've had over 1 million votes cast. They're predicting turnout about 17%. So it will be interesting to see what happens with that North Carolina. Obviously, Mitt Romney is topping the list in all of the primary states. There were three primaries today, Indiana, West Virginia, and North Carolina. What's interesting is that, you know, Ron Paul is currently in Indiana is running second with 15%, but Rick Santorum's got 14% in Indiana with 80% reporting. Got kind of similar results going on in West Virginia. Actually, Rick Santorum, there's only 20% reporting, but Rick Santorum is actually in second place there. And let's see what else we got going on. Let me find another state. Where to go? There's North Carolina. And in North Carolina, we got basically Rick and Ron. Ron's at 11 and Rick's at 10%. So it's just some interesting tidbits going on in the election process. And I tell you, for some reason, the Ron Paul people think they're going to still win. if anybody's got that one figured out for me, feel free to call in and explain that to me, 718-305-7176. In fact, you know, I had a couple of Ron Paul supporters today outside the polling place, and some interesting conversations going on there, and I don't want to get into that too much. But what I did want to say is Rick Santorum actually did endorse Mitt Romney last night in an email sent out to all of us who have been followers of his. And, you know, this was not unexpected. He has said from day one that he will support whoever the nominee is going to be. And if we're living in the real world, that nominee at this point looks to be Mitt Romney. I know it's not what we is our best choice. None of us feel that's our best choice. None of us really wanted that to happen, but it has happened. And now we've got to figure out how we're going to get him a win in November, because what cannot happen is we cannot have another 4 years of Obama, or our country is going to cease to exist as we know it. And so, you know, I don't care. You know, yes, Romney was pro-choice. Romney has said he's now pro-life. I will take the man at his word and hope he's telling the truth. But we know that President Obama is not pro-life. He's pro-choice. He's funded Planned Parenthood. He's got this Obamacare that funds, supposed to fund birth control and more abortions and all this other stuff that I am totally
against. The biggest difference between the two is Obama is pro-socialism and Romney is pro-capitalism.
Yes. At least
and
we
that's
hope
what
so.
We really need to take over in this country again. We have too much government. We have too many different entities in the government. We have too many, you know, bureaucrats trying to tell us, you know, what our freedom of speech really is. This political correctness is driving me nuts.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I am sorry. I'm not going to sit here and I'm not an Islamophobic. I'm an Islamanoic, okay? I know what Islam is, and I know their deceptive ways. I'm not going to sit here and try saying that Islam is a religion of peace when I know otherwise. I'm not going to take Obama's word for it just because he says it's not. You know, that kind of stuff, I'm not afraid to say it. Call me Islamophobic all you want. I'm not going to turn my back on any Islam, Muslim.
Well, and the problem has been is that we have been too politically correct. We have been too silent. We haven't stood up when we should have and said, no, this is enough, and we're not going to tolerate that. All the while, the Democrats have been going about their little plan, you know, which for any of you who have not listened to my show before, there is a list out there. All you got to do is type in Communist Agenda 1963 Congressional Record, and you will see exactly what I'm talking about. Has to do with, you know, destroying the family and destroying our religion, from making it a social religion instead of moral, and promoting promiscuity and many things that degrade society as a whole. And we have... Some of us as Christians, I know not everybody is a Christian, but even conservatives, we just spend quietly going about our lives without realizing to what point and what extent this has actually gotten. And seriously, if Obama gets another 4 years, I question, and like Rick said, this is the biggest election of our lifetime. And he's not saying
it
that
is,
lightly.
Because
he's not saying
everything.
That lightly.
Everything Obama stands for, and this is really sad to say, you know, I know that it sounds crazy, but
yeah,
it's not crazy when you know the facts, when you actually looked at the facts and you can see that 2 + 2 = 4. If President Obama wins, and this is just a vague prediction, he will turn our country into a dictatorship, and he will have much more than 4 years. Plus, we'll be all under Sharia law.
Well,
not right away.
Or even if it doesn't, he will try, and then we're going to have civil war, which
exactly.
is not a outcome that any of us really want to see either, you know, because
exactly.
it is our country. But what a lot of people don't know is that part of the Alinsky, Saul Alinsky, the Marxist, you know, doctrine is that you go into the poorer communities and you slowly kind of infiltrate and you indoctrinate them to your way of thinking. And this is what Obama actually started in the Alinsky school in Chicago. And they teach these people, for those of you who may not know this is why you get called a racist or a bigot if you voice any conservative view. If you're against, you know, gay marriage, or I was a racist because I wasn't voting for Obama, even though I tried to explain to people that, you know, the 2008 economic crisis was not a result of the Bush administration, that it was more to blame. I mean, they were all to blame, but the Democrats had a huge role in that. Dodd and Frank, who refused to regulate when Bush called for regulations, and 12 different times, you know. And in 2005, the Republicans tried to get a bill out of committee to rein in Freddie and Fannie, and the Democrats, you know, were blocking it. I mean, there's so much more that went into that. And I was called a racist because I wasn't voting for Obama. Now, this is the propaganda that the Democrats use, and they indoctrinate people. And this is why in the black communities you'll see that, you know, they're taught to hate the Republicans or the Tea Party. We're racist, we're bigots. And a lot of us, I could never understand, you know. It's like, no, I'm not. You know, why are you saying that? Because I'm not. But and this is why. It totally is. an indoctrination. And it was really interesting at a Tea Party event I attended a week or so back, and they had this Hispanic guy there who actually had been in prison for 3 years. He wasn't very old, in his 20s. But he said, we got to reach out to the inner cities and to, you know, the hood, because he was indoctrinated firsthand. And once he was shown, you know, no, this is the way it really is, you know, that brought him around. And now he's political. I don't know if he's on YouTube or not, but he does rapping songs to promote capitalism and freedom and that type of thing. So, but that's a battle we're up against, folks, in this upcoming election, because, yeah, we all see Obama as being bad, 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 but some of these people think he's just the greatest thing ever. And I've actually talked to some of these people. So instead of saying, we're not going to vote for Romney, we can't, you know, we're not going to do this, we're not going to do this, we got to look at the bigger picture. And that bigger picture is our country. And we have to do what we can to save our country. And if that means we vote for Romney and we get the vote out for Romney, that's what that means. You know, it doesn't mean just staying home in your chair and refusing to exercise the right to vote that our forefathers, founding fathers, you know, people died to give you that right to save this country. And so, you know, I found that very frustrating, you know, last night that I was hearing this from people, and it's like, you're not understanding, you know, the importance of this election. But yeah, anybody that's out there, feel free to give us a call. We'll be discussing multiple topics tonight, and we gladly take calls, questions, thoughts, anything you want to throw our way. And so, yeah. What do you think, Billy? You're kind of quiet.
I'm sorry, what was that?
You're going to make me talk tonight, aren't you?
Well, no, you know, it's just when I, you know, my husband was asking me a question, so I did take the phone away from my ear for a second.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm just noticing a few things lately. And it comes down to one big common denominator for me. And that happens to be the entire religious, you know, our establishment clause.
Mm-hmm.
We have a freedom of religion in this country. And if you look at it, last year, President Obama took the Catholic Church to the Supreme Court because they don't have women as clergy, as priests, as bishops. You know, women cannot get those kinds of jobs.
Right.
Now, the thing I noticed just recently is, guess what? You know, he says he's all about women's rights, yet he did not go after Islam about getting any women imams or women, you know, sheikhs or anything like that. He went only after one religion.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And it just makes it show that the establishment clause of our Constitution, where the government cannot establish a religion, is being mocked, because he's establishing basically Islam as our religion.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way, especially with their tolerance for the Sharia law and the court system. Hey, we have Thomas on the phone, and I'm going to bring him live. Hey, Thomas, how are you today?
Hi, Thomas. I'm well. Hi, Billy.
Is your head doing okay? You had me worried for a while there.
Well, I still have the two big lumps.
Well, but you're not seeing double, and you're not
no
problem like that.
I'm much better.
Well, that's good.
I did pray for you the other night when you were on the Cure show.
So, I have an announcement to make.
Okay.
Which is?
I'm attacking the whole situation on a whole different front. You know, I'll still talk about political issues, but you know what? I'm going back to the roots of who I am. See, because I'm going to let you guys in on a dirty little secret.
Okay. I love secrets.
You know how they always talk about that if ministers and pastors, preachers, rabbis and stuff like that, that if you talk about politics and political candidates from the pulpit, you lose your 501c3 tax exempt mm-hmm. status. You want to know a dirty little secret?
What's that?
Churches are not required to file for 501c3 tax exempt status because of a provision in the 501c3 code of the IRS. They're automatically recognized as being tax exempt. So for the IRS to pull their tax exemption, they would actually have to amend the entire 501c code, which they never done. Actually, it was amended when Lyndon B. Johnson added that amendment in 1955 because his conservative pastors and preachers in 1955 were supporting the conservative candidate against him in his run for U.S. congressional office. So he stuck that amendment in there, and now there's a bill that's being moved through the House to appeal the Johnson amendment to the 501c code. So therefore, as a teacher of the gospel of Jesus Christ, I can honestly tell you guys, the last few days I've been getting myself ramped up in terms of, you know, just doing a lot of praying. I can't explain it, but my mentality, my whole attitude on things, it's a whole nother place because you guys kind of know my testimony. You kind of know what God's brought me through. And I'm going to tell you this. Quite frankly, I am sick and tired of seeing all the hand-wringing and the devil being celebrated and hyped up because, oh, look what Obama's doing. He's invincible. The government's going to get us. I'm going to tell you something, guys, whether you choose to believe this or not, but I'm speaking from personal experience in my own life, and as the Word of God says, God is no respecter of persons. We as believers, whether Christian, Catholic, whatever, regardless of what you are, if you are a follower of the Lord Jesus Christ, you are a believer. Some may have a little more traditions than others, but I'm going to tell you something. Me personally, because I have been through the fires and turmoil and tragedies of, you know, of my life and stuff like that, and it molded and shaped me into a person who loves people, cares about people, and now I declare war on the enemy, talking about Satan, and I'm going to speak the word of God, and anyone that aligns themselves with him, they're my enemy. Therefore, Barack Hussein Obama is my enemy, and there is nothing he can do to shut me up. There's scripture in the Bible that says, don't fear the man that can kill the body. Fear the one who can destroy both the body and the soul
and the
hell.
Absolutely.
Body, soul, and spirit in hell. So my announcement is this. I don't know, well, it'll be Sundays because I already do my Reality in Christ ministry shows, but I'm getting ready to ramp that back up. I never stopped, but I'm going to be starting my church here in Kansas City, actual church, and I'm going to be traveling this nation teaching the gospel. I don't care what denomination you are. If you want me, come in. I'm going to come in and I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm not going to mince my words, and I'm going to be real about it. That's all I have to say.
Well, good for you, Thomas, because, you know, here, you know, this church exempt, I mean, and yet then we have, you know, Obama's lackeys down in the black churches, you know, preaching from the gospel, and then not preaching the gospel, but talking from the pulpit about Obama, and then registering voters out of the church services.
Yep.
You know, there's like this double standard going on, which is just ridiculous. And it's
right.
Funny you should bring up the IRS, because the newest thing coming out is the $4 billion that the taxpayers are paying for kids
mm-hmm.
that are living in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And the IRS knows
that.
About it, and they won't do anything to stop it. Because
right.
nope.
these immigrants, they don't have to have Social Security numbers. They have this IPIN number or ITIN number or something.
Individual... Yeah,
tax identification number, so they
yeah.
can file for their taxes. And then they file as dependents their 20 children that are living in Mexico, $4
yep.
billion. Dollars. And yet they can't cut government waste. They have to cut the military, and they have to cut Medicare. You know, there's something seriously wrong with this, not just this administration, but with government as a whole, when this
right.
type
well,
of thing is going on.
Well, with the tax system. See, the thing is, a lot of them weren't taking advantage of it until it was pointed out to them.
Oh, well, yeah,
and,
that's helpful.
yeah.
And you know what?
Just help them build the system. You know?
Think about this for a minute, though. Think about this for a minute. That is actually something that we as conservative taxpayers can actually hold against the IRS, because when they come to audit us or whatever, our churches or whatever, we can say, well, excuse me, I'm going to basically ignore what you have to say until you decide that you're going to deal with the money that's being illegally refunded to illegal immigrants in Mexico, and if you still come after me, and I'm a federal lawsuit against you. And contrary to what people think, we can actually go after the IRS.
Yeah, it's just they've kind of been the boogeyman for so many years, you know.
Yeah,
don't mess with the IRS, you know.
Well, you know what? It's time to start terrorizing the IRS, and we now have the weapons and the means to do it.
Well, the thing is, the IRS operates on the code of law. It's the law that needs to change, though. It's not that the IRS did anything wrong at all. It's that the law is wrong.
But no.
The law
no.
itself says
Billy.
They can claim up to 12 exemptions each. And they just have to be,
Billy.
I mean, it's so vague that they can get away with
immigrants,
it.
But,
illegal
Billy.
Immigrants can claim that? That's what the law
oh,
says?
Yeah, that yeah. no, that's not, that's, if it, it might say that, but here's where they cannot claim someone who is not living there. That is fraud. That is
but
fraud.
But they can.
No, they can't. I watched the news broadcast of it when it first came out a few days ago. No, they can't. Those 12 children have to be living with them for them to get those exemptions. If not, they are committing a fraud. They can't.
Oh, well,
that.
Yeah, they're
That's
supposed to be considered. Wait. But the thing is, no, this is the part of the loophole that they have in it. They claim that the address in Mexico is also their residence for 6 months of the year. They claim residence 6 months here and 6 months there. So they say they do live with them for 6 months of the year, and they do support them. Therefore, that loophole is what needs to change.
Well, yeah. And
because
I think
anybody
we're
who claims a child, I claim 2 children every year. My children, I have to mark the box. Have your children lived with you at least 6 months of the year? Yes, they have. That is the box you have to check. If they haven't, then you don't get the exemption. However, these people come up here for 6 months to work legally with a work visa, and then they go back down to Mexico, live there for 6 months, and they are able to claim both as their residency. So they can, the tax system needs to change.
Absolutely. Which is why we were also in love with 999 and getting rid of the IRS.
Exactly.
But so, you know.
I have to run, but I want to say this, and this is all I'm saying. We cannot continue the hand-wringing over the government and stuff like that, because we are the ones who have, as believers in the Lord Jesus Christ, we're the ones that have the power in the authority of the spoken word. Now, whether or not people choose, Christians, Catholics, many others, whether we choose to act on it, it's your choice what you choose to do with it. But at the end of the day, if you're not using the power and authority that Christ Jesus gave you, you have no one to blame but your fault.
But yourself, that is, yes.
But that's the reason why I'm stepping back into what God has called me to, and I'm taking it from there. I love you guys to pieces. You know that. That's why I wanted to come on your show and announce that, because I, you know what, when I say this, just to show you how serious I am, I was in a conflict with someone for like a while now, hadn't spoke to this individual for probably like 3 weeks. You know what I did today? I went in the other room and I shook their hands, asked their forgiveness, because I'm telling you something. I am in a whole nother place. When I say I'm taking this war to a whole nother level, I'm taking this war to a whole nother level. Can I read something real quick? One last
sure.
thing,
go right
if
ahead.
That's okay.
Go ahead.
That's fine.
It's from the second chapter of Corinthians, and it's verses 4, let me see, is that, no, that's still 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, Thomas, come on, always do that. I went to the right chapter and verse, but just the wrong Corinthians. Okay, chapter 10, verses 4 through to 10, but let me start from 1. Now I, Paul, myself beseech you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, wherein presence am base among you, but being absent am bold towards you, but I beseech you that I may not be bold when I am present with that confidence wherewith I think to be bold against some. In other words, Paul said, I'm a temper what I say towards you guys, because you guys are a little bit more humble, rather than what I would say towards someone of the likes of, say, a Barack Hussein Obama. Because I don't know if anyone picks up on the correlation, but Barack Obama is the equivalent of the Sadducees and the Pharisees in the Bible, the same Sadducees and the Pharisees that Jesus always ripped to shred when they tried to get all high and mighty and indignant. So anyway, okay.
Well, so, thank you, Thomas, for making that announcement. And go ahead.
I wasn't done yet. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I wanted to add that. I was breaking down that little part of the scripture.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
No,
okay.
Go ahead.
Wherewith I think to be bold against some, which think of us as if we walked according to the flesh, which is mine. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, which is natural, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imagination and every high thing, Barack Obama, that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ, and having in a readiness to revenge all disobedience once our obedience is fulfilled. So in other words, it did not tell us as believers that we're not to stand out against disobedience and wickedness and unrighteousness. It says we do it only when we ourselves are right with Christ. See, that's a little thing that we as believers have been missing. And this is the message that I'm taking to people, because I believe with all my heart the Lord's going to use me to get people charged up, fired up, and stepping into their destiny and their purpose. And I'm going to be calling an army of warriors and believers, because the truth of the matter is this, ladies and gentlemen, we are the first line and the last line of defense in this natural, in this supernatural battle. That's all I have to say now.
Absolutely. And thank you, Thomas, for sharing that and sharing your announcement, because we're going to have to be strong, and we're going to have to use every arsenal in our defense system to hopefully get this win in the fall. So we appreciate that immensely.
Right. Right. All right, you guys.
Okay.
I'm glad to know that
you're doing better. You had me worried there for a while when you were talking about, you know, having
symptoms
and not going to the doctor. So.
Well, I went, but I didn't get seen, but that's okay, because God is working it out with the prayers. But know from the bottom of my heart, all you guys, Michael B., you, Billy and Daniel, Mike in the chat room, all you guys, I love y'all the pieces. God bless you, and stay tuned, because you watch what God is going to do through me, through my life. I'm gonna turn this city upside down for Jesus Christ. So, anyway, you
awesome.
Guys have a good night. Love you.
All right.
God
love
bless.
You too.
Night, Thomas. Love you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Thomas. And there we had Padre Thomas joining us for the night with some exciting news. And I'm just going to give you a quick update here. We're in the North Carolina Marriage Amendment Law. Let me see what we got. So far, we got about a 25% voter turnout, and there's 343,000 ahead in the for the marriage amendment in North Carolina. So that's another one that a lot of people are watching, because they already they didn't have gay marriage there. That was already, I think, a law there, but they wanted an amendment that the marriage is just between a man and a woman. And it looks like they are going to get that in North Carolina. So
awesome, because see, they took their cue from Iowa. Iowa has it in their constitution too, but guess what? The judges ignored it.
Well, they
and
can't
the judges
do that.
Said, "Oh, we're just going to go ahead and do it."
That's called legislating from the bench. And that is that the ones that they got kicked out? Those judges?
Yep.
Or are they still
we got rid
okay.
of them?
Yeah. Okay. Because, that's not, you can't do that.
Exactly.
That's not how it works. Okay. And, of course, the exciting news coming here out of Indiana is that the conservatives and the Tea Party are alive and well. Richard Murdoch is going to take out six-time incumbent Senator Lugar. This is the first time he's actually had a challenger in the six terms that he served. And, it's going to be, looks like right now Richard Murdoch is about 61% to Lugar's 39%. Indianapolis is nearly finished reporting, except for Hamilton County's got to come in. So it's going to be about a 60-40 win for Richard Murdoch here in Indiana. And they're going to spin it, folks, because, you know, the Tea Party is dead, according to Washington's, and we're bad people, and I'm not really Tea Party, but I did, you know, I do kind of feel like I kind of closely associate with them as far as the limited government and getting the tax code reformed and term limits and all those things that the Tea Party stands for. I also tend to stand for those as a I'm a right-wing nut is what I was called many times in the 2008. That's what they would call me in 2008 when I was blogging, trying to get people to vote for McCain over Obama.
It's the wing nuts that keep the screws from becoming loose.
That's right. There you go. We might be, yeah. You know, yes. At least we're not as far out as some of those people I talked to today. So it's like, oh, okay. You know, I'm, you know.
I know. I hear the same stuff, Brenda. I'm like, you know, the big thing is that when it comes to certain issues, even being pro-life, you're automatically anti-woman. They automatically make this disassociation with you because you're, you know, abortion is a woman's right. It's her body.
Right.
But you, they ignore the entire idea of life within that body. And
right.
I'm a woman, and I'm called a hater of women. I'm, you know, someone who absolutely loves all people.
Uh-huh.
But you know what? I do not hate a single person in this world, and I won't. But when it comes to Muslims and Islam, I don't turn my back, and I'm not quick to trust. And I won't be, because I know what their religion is all about. Right now, they have three stages of Islam that enhance their jihadism, so to speak. One is they come among the masses and pretend to like them. They don't really like them. It even says in their Quran, like them on the outside, but never, ever allow them into your heart. You can like them on the outside, but if you allow them into your heart, you deserve to die as a Muslim. So they never really like you.
Mm-hmm.
So why should anybody become close to them if they know, if you know that they're not going to really like you? It's right there in their religion not to.
Right.
So that, you know, that's what makes me cautious and concerned about them. I'm not a hater, but it does keep me from turning my back, and I have a lack of trust in them.
Right. And it comes from a behavior that they, not all of them, but that...
comes from their Quran.
Yes. Comes from their Quran, and we've seen examples of the behavior. And we've seen them on TV where they were cheering in the streets when, the, you know, the Twin Towers fell in New York City. You know, we
mm-hmm.
have all these examples how they rejoice, you know, when something bad happens to America. And, you know, I was actually... you know, I was glad we got Osama bin Laden, but I didn't like the fact that there were people actually out in the streets here in this country because, you know, death is part of war, but I don't know that it should ever really be celebrated in a manner. I don't know.
Well,
I have
know,
mixed
that,
feelings about
that.
That
even comes from the Bible, though, and this is kind of scary for me because
mm-hmm.
when I look at David, King David, every war he won, he had a celebration afterward. And he won a lot of wars.
Well, yeah. Well, you do celebrate a victory in the war, but not the death of one particular individual.
Right. You know,
you
don't celebrate the death. You celebrate the victory.
Right. Right. And in the case of Osama bin Laden, it wasn't really a victory. It was more of he's dead. And I kind of,
yeah.
I had really mixed feelings about that because I thought, you know, we are doing the same thing they are, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know that I necessarily,
well, yeah, I'd be happier,
say,
let me tell you this
myself.
Straight out, I'd be much happier had they captured him. Don't ask me why, it sounds kind of crazy, but I'd be happier if they had captured him and they would have more intelligence from him.
Well, they would have, but there was another drone strike today. Did you, or was that, well, that was today, right?
Yeah, I think it was today, this morning.
They took out that
early wee hours.
The guy that builds the bombs.
Oh.
Yeah, so.
They got him?
Yeah. They killed him.
The one who,
that was building the bomb. Yeah.
I heard there was a drone strike. I did not know who it was.
Yeah, that's who it was. And apparently this guy was so nuts that one of the bombs he built against some minister there, his brother wore it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that's...
he killed,
like,
his own brother, I know.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
terrible.
And it's like, how
can... he's such a chicken, you know? He's not a real... he's not even... this is the funny part. To me, he's not even the real person that he preaches to be. He's, you know, this great Muslim, but the Muslim practice is to martyr yourself, to die in the name of Allah. But he sends other people to get killed in the name of Allah.
Well, you know, somebody's got to build the bombs to put in the underwear.
There you go. I guess that's a good excuse not to do it for yourself.
Yeah, I really don't know. But, you know, that just kind of drives home the evil or the irrational part of it, that you would be willing to sacrifice your family and everything in this cause, you know, of bringing down Satan or the devil or whatever we are to them. And people want to say it's because we've been over there attacking them. And yet, if you go back into the letters of Thomas Jefferson, I believe in 1785, he was talking about their religion when he was on a trip in England, about how, you know, they had to kill the infidels. And so this is nothing new for them. This, you know, was being dealt with back in the 1700s, and we certainly weren't attacking them back in the 1700s.
No.
So, you know, to sit there and try to blame it on America, as some people do, does
well,
not
see,
fit in
stage
with the
one. Stage one is to, like I told you, they're supposed to come among us and then love us on the outside, practice peace while they're in the minority. And then stage two is become the victim.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's what we're in right now. They're the victim, remember? PC,
mm-hmm.
gone awry. We've got political correctness. You know, Islamophobia all over the place. Why? Because they're claiming victim status. Stage three is when they become the majority and they take out all the infidels.
Yeah, okay. And that's kind of happening in Europe and different places, and it's that's a little bit scary when you start going into that. And once again, it drives home the importance of this election and the fact that we have to bond together and in November be sure that we beat Obama.
Yeah.
You know, there's people on the Santorum pages and different places pushing, you know, a third party. Oh, you got to go here and do this. And I'm like, no, we have to win this election. And then, you know, we might want to actually look at forming a conservative type of party, you know, get people together for, you know, the 2014 and 2016, but not for the 2012 election, because this is, for America, you know, a do or die situation. We've got to get a handle on this out of control path we've gone down and get it under control before we can start to fix the problems that go on. Because I truly believe, because of today, the way they're playing this up here, you know, Luger's trying to say it's the outside influences and it's blah, 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 this and it's blah, 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 that. And they give no credit at all to the fact that people here in Indiana work really, really, really hard to get, Richard Murdoch elected today. You know, a lot of ground game, a lot of hours on the ground put in by people going door to door. So, you know, and I don't know that they're ever going to listen to us. You know, this bit about them trying to make the Tea Party out to be the bad people and the Tea Party's dead and this kind of thing that we're hearing out of the establishment doesn't really, and the fact that, you know, how we got Romney pushed on us doesn't really look good for the conservative, you know, portion of the party. So I don't know. We're just going to end.
You know what it makes the conservative era look like, or the conservative sector look like? It makes them look like sheep.
Yes.
It makes them look like sheep to the Republican Party. That the Republican Party is the shepherd and we are the sheep.
Well, that's what they think anyway. And they will continue to think that unless we make a stand. But this is not the time to make that stand. You know, we need to get the conservatives elected. I think there's some running. And Michael, if he's still listening, he'd call in and tell us. I think there's one running in Texas actually Senator DeMint did say to Richard Murdoch, you get me three or four more conservatives in the Senate and we'll be good. So, you know, if we can get those conservatives for him and, you know, we might be able to work through that way yet. So, you know, we just have to do what we can and take it one step at a time at this point. So,
well, see, the Democrats want to call the Tea Party kooks and weirdos and anti-government and all this other
and
stuff.
And the extreme.
But
today
then, look at your occupiers.
Yeah.
You got Nancy Pelosi and Obama and Harry Reid feeling sorry
people.
For them.
The occupiers. Yeah, you were talking about the one that was on Hannity. Some 30-year-old kid who thought everything should be free or something, or we should find him
a
job.
Well, no,
he
even wants
what
a free job.
About.
He doesn't even want to work at getting a job. It's funny because the next day, Sean Hannity decided, oh, I'll put him on my radio show and let's see if we can find him a job. And he did. And what happened?
Oh, yeah.
You know what he did?
He
came out saying, well, I'm not going to take anything less than $80,000 a year. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to. It was all negative.
And
it's
there you
like,
go.
What will you do?
Yeah.
Well, I'll, you know, he basically wants to be an anarchist. And more power to him if that's what he wants to be.
Well, yeah.
But
and there, and,
you know
and
what? Suffer the consequence of not having any pay.
Yeah, and unfortunately, he's not the only one with that attitude. And we do have Michael Smith on the line. I'm going to bring him on. Hey, Michael.
Hey, what's up, ladies?
Hi, Michael.
Oh, well, some excitement going on here in Indiana today. So
we're excited down here in Texas. This is a Tea Party victory.
It was, definitely. And it was a lot of hard work, Michael. You know, and I'm just like, you know, I come in and I see the TV and I see the headlines here on the internet trying to say, oh, the extreme wing of the party and, oh, Senator Lugar's blaming it on the outside PACs when it literally was ground game in Indiana, which I was proud to be a part of whatever little bit I was able to do. But it was really hard work. And it was a well-deserved victory on his part. So
well, and it was, Brittany, and you did a lot of work, and we know you did a lot of work. We saw what you did, and here's the thing: it's a Tea Party victory not only for what you guys did on the ground game, but what all of the Tea Party conservatives across the country. You know, I didn't tweet a dang thing for Richard Murdoch. I've been busy doing it for a lot of other folks, but. A lot of folks across this country were helping you, Tea Party conservatives from all over the country, you guys on the ground there in Indiana. And, you know, back to what you and Billy were – hey, Billy, by the way, how's it going, buddy?
Hey, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. But going back to what y'all were talking about earlier and you know, kind of have it – we're going to have to swallow that Romney pill. You know, we're all a little disheartened about that. Well, let's take what joy we can out of this, because this is a victory. Everybody's been claiming that the Tea Party's dead. It was all the news today. Rush was talking about it. Levin was talking about it. Fact of the matter is the Tea Party is not dead. We're alive and well, and they want to sweep us under the rug and pull us out every 4 years because we're about 50% of the base, in our base in the Republican Party.
Right.
And they want to sweep us under the rug. They want to dismiss us. They want to talk ill of us. But then they want to pull us out and they want to cater to us. And pardon my French, they want to kiss our ass during a cycle. And
right. They want you to be cheap.
Exactly what you're saying.
And we aren't cheap.
No, and we're sick of it. And, you know, Murdoch is just a fine example of what's going to happen. You know, we've got a choice here in Texas between Craig James, who I know he's a great man. Craig doesn't have a chance. I wanted to get behind Craig, but he just doesn't have a chance. Leopard is just a wolf in sheep's clothing, the same as Dewhurst. The Tea Party candidate, like Murdoch, is Ted Cruz. We've got them all. We've got Brian Cahill up in Connecticut. We have Tony Hernandez in. Oh, goodness, Minnesota, not in Minnesota, it escapes me now. But we've got Tea Party people set everywhere. The Tea Party's done phenomenal. Even as far down as County Commissioner's Court, the Tea Party has chosen people with their polls. We're putting it out just like you did everywhere across the board. We're firing all these bastards. We're getting rid of them, and we're taking our party back.
Yeah. Yeah, and if they're not going to let us have our party back, I was thinking the other day, if we could just get Rick and Michelle and Sarah together, and we can have our own little party.
Yeah.
And we'll show them what's what.
And, you know, and that's really, and I hear what you're saying, and it's a fond dream. It really is. I mean, there's something about it, laying in bed at night thinking, well, you know what, I'm just going to stick a riv to these SOBs. But I'll give you an example. I was in Scotland back in 2000 and was in a bar, was throwing back some single malt scotch and chasing it with some really fine Scottish ale. And you know, we got to talking politics. You know me. I didn't even know. It take me across the big pond, and I'm still talking it. So, but I asked him, I said, so, you know, at the time they were shooting for their own Scottish Parliament and kind of halfway breaking away from the Commonwealth. And So I asked them, how do they feel about this? And they're like, well, you know, for what we're doing for Scottish business, you know, outside of national defense of the Commonwealth and all of that, but just for, you know, what happens in Scotland proper, you know, that's where it was going. And they're like, that's not bad, but we really need to stay a part of the UK because there's strength in numbers. Same with Texas. You know, you'll often hear Texans bragging about secession, which is bogus anyway. There's some misconception there, but anyway, you'll hear it batted around a little bit. Well, there's really, yeah, there's that part that gets your blood pumping. You know, I'll stick a riv to them. We'll separate and we'll start our own conservative movement. But then what happens is we'll lose everything. We'll lose every single. What we've got to do is like what Ronald Reagan said. We've got to bring the people to us, and we can.
Right.
We did it in 80.
Oh,
we
look
did
what
it.
Texas is doing right now. They've got businesses growing left and right in Texas because the tax deal down there is just what businesses need.
Well, it's a very fine example of a state model that, if put on a national model, which is exactly what Ronald Reagan did in 1980. It's a very conservative state. We have very conservative legislature. I mean, we do have Democrats down here. Don't get me wrong, but our Democrats are more conservative than most Democrats than all the Democrats in the Northeast. So, you know, it's a matter of selling people our ideas and proving to them. And Texas and many other states have. Look what Scott Walker's doing in Wisconsin right now. Indiana's another prime example of states that are going red. And they're bringing people on board that are seeing the results and the fruits of conservatism.
Yeah. And hang on, guys. Thomas is back on the line, so I'm going to bring him live. Hey, Thomas.
Okay. I just wanted to add somebody to the list that Mr. Michael B. forgot to add from Texas.
Oh, okay.
And he's a Tea Party candidate. I know him personally. And it's someone... You say you trust me, Michael, so this is somebody that you could get behind, even though they say that he doesn't have a chance. Kurt Cleaver.
Now, what is he – I'm not familiar with him, so what's he running for, Padre?
United States Senate. He's out of Fort Worth. Kurt Cleaver. What is it, 2020?
Is he related to Emmanuel Cleaver?
I'm not familiar.
Kurt Cleaver. Don't insult him like that. He's a white guy.
Well, no, I'm sure he's a fine man. I'll have to
hey,
check.
Hey, I'm going by a name, not a face.
Yeah, he's a good candidate, and if you could get his if you can get him supported, and also Al Lee is running for Texas Railroad Commission down there. Another strong conservative guy. If you can, you guys can stir up support. You can stir up support for him for the Texas Railroad Commission.
Well, I have a question for Texas. Is Sheila Jackson Lee up for re-election?
Okay.
She's down in Houston. Yeah, she's a long ways away from me.
Yeah.
But does she have cancer? I don't like her. She's crazy.
Yeah, someone needs to unbraid her hair. That's what her brain is braided too tight or something.
I don't even know what you guys are talking about. I've been so
she
kind of involved
with what... She's this wild, crazy, heavyset black woman on the house floor that goes, I mean, ballistic. Everything is racial to her. Everybody's racist but her.
And she's the biggest one of all. But, hey.
Exactly. She hates white people. She'll admit it. She hates white people.
I took a picture that someone had. Well, actually, I didn't put the picture of her. It was a picture that I found on Facebook. It had Jesse Jackson. It had Reverend Sharpton. It had Sheila Lee Jackson, and it was a total of six leaders within the black community on the left. So. I made another picture that had Herman Cain, Justice Thomas, J.C. Watts, Brian Cahill. Who else did I? I forget. Alan West. It had six strong conservatives from the black community, and on the caption underneath it said, "The six on the left want to enslave people, the six on the right want to free people." And it's been, I mean, all you had to do was look at and anybody that watches the news and knew who these folks were. And it, I mean, it spoke wonders. My brother-in-law kind of got upset with me about it. And I said, well, it's the truth. And then he tried to say, but there's so few minority conservatives. And I said, but those numbers are growing every day. And he said, well, they just don't understand, you know, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, what they all went through. And I said, are you kidding me? Herman Cain, Atlanta, Georgia. You're telling me?
Yeah, the heart of the South, Atlanta, Georgia.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, come on.
Time out.
What's
that? Anyone ever heard any stories of Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton having family members who were killed for racially motivated crimes?
Not to my knowledge, I haven't.
No, exactly. I know his daughter preaches about, Jesse Jackson's daughter right now is preaching for Obama.
Yeah, well, you know what? You know what? It's like I said earlier, weapons of the warfare are not carnal, but they're mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. That's what I'm going to stick by, because you know what? That no matter how powerful Barack Obama thinks he is, he stands no chance against the true power of God, because God's power is real. But anyway.
Oh, I get offended whenever he says Jesus' name. I don't know why.
Well, I mean, I'll just
mocking it.
I'll use the Padre here as another example. Look, you know, look at where conservatism is going, and the quality of the character of folks that are coming in from other communities that are coming into conservatism and preaching it like the Padre here.
Send your brother to Keira Davis's show. Send him to Thomas's show.
Yeah.
And let him hear the truth.
Yeah, he would find something cynical to say about Padre, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? And then, like what I do with normal, typical liberals, I just chew them up, spit them out, wipe the crumbs off my lips, and go all about my business. But speaking of Keira Davis, I got to get over to her show because she's on now. You guys, all the good shows are all on at the same time, so you know.
Yeah, I know. We've got new competition out there on the Own the Narrative Network.
Oh.
Yeah, are they on every night or when are they on?
Oh, Keira.
Yeah, they're pretty much on every night.
Keira's just on two nights a week, Sundays and Tuesdays, but CN Conservative News Daily is on like
every night, but different people. So, you know.
Yeah.
I'm only on two nights a week now, 2 to 3 nights a week, just depending on how I feel. Because, like I said earlier, hopefully I'm going to be doing a lot more traveling. And I'm going to be promoting, a pro-life believer friend of mine and getting her speaking engagements all over the country through a business that I actually started it years ago, but people talking and they didn't actually follow through, and it's called Clients of Integrity. And I'm a Christian-based clients and stuff like that, get them speaking engagements and promote their music, because she's written a book, she's has a praise and worship CD, and she's a speaker, she's a pro-life speaker. And so you know, and
kind of like Dr. Alveda King.
Yep. Actually, Dr. Alveda King is part of the Frederick Douglass Foundation. And,
I love Alveda King.
She's a good
lady. Well,
speaking
of Frederick Douglass, though, I was watching this thing with Charles Ogletree on the other day, and he was talking about how he teaches Frederick Douglass, but he teaches him as a liberal.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh,
he teaches him as a big government liberal.
Now you done pissed off the Padre.
Interesting. Well, that just goes to show the dumbing down of America, because Frederick Douglass was not a liberal. First of all, liberals don't work for anything; they have their hands out.
Mm-hmm.
This man worked hard. He bought his freedom from slavery. He was a presidential advisor to 2 presidents. He wrote books. He was a millionaire when he died, folks. That's not liberalism for you.
It sure isn't. Well, you stand.
Yeah. No.
The whole country could stand to learn a lot from. I've read quite a bit of Frederick Douglass's writings. The man was just gifted.
A genius.
Yep.
So. I know. But according to, like, Charles Ogletree, he just comes off as basically he was everything. Everybody in the liberals, on the liberal side, took everything that he was about to a higher level, and they expanded. But he was like the igniter, the spark.
Well, they do the same thing with Dr. King, and they do the same thing with Jesus, for crying out loud.
Yeah, they do.
All the time they try to tell you that Jesus was a liberal.
Yep.
You know,
yes,
never mind that. Padre, correct me if I'm wrong or if I say it incorrectly, but wasn't it Jesus that said, give a man a fish and you feed him for a day,
teach a man to fish and you feed him for life. Yep. Yeah.
You know, that's not liberalism.
Nope.
Nope.
No, but
that's called pulling yourselves up by your bootstraps.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, like with me, my career is going to be, traveling and speaking. But I have to, by faith, I have to continue to make the connections. And the way I'm doing it is slow and tedious. But hopefully enough people will know about me, put the word out about me, so I can start getting invitations. Miss Brenda Ward and Mr. Michael B. and Miss Billy Cotter, you guys are Tea Party connected, so where are my invites, huh? What's up with that? What y'all wait for? You've known me for months now, and y'all ain't invited me yet.
I'm not actually Tea Party connected yet.
I've just kind of been to a couple meetings.
But, okay, Mr. Know. Michael B., what's your excuse?
I don't have one. I've just, it's called failing on the job.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
That's something to build from, and we conservatives recognize that. We don't sit here and say, okay, now we want a handout when we say we failed at something.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, it wasn't a failed year because I never actually mentioned it to him, say it tongue in cheek. So, you know, but you know what? And sometimes it takes, there's a difference between, you know, ask the type of help that I'm asking for versus, okay, somebody with a handout.
Mm-hmm.
That would be like me saying, pay me for speaking and then not going to speak. That's what welfare is. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with someone saying, hey, you know what? You know any groups that would want to bring in type of speaker that I am of my caliber, you know, because what I've done, just because of the kind of person that I am, I do have a message that is tremendous. And when it get out there, it's a message that would actually command thousands of dollars in speaking fees. But you know what I did, even though I've not spoken yet ever? When my speaking fees, let's just put it like this, they will never, ever touch $1,000. Ever. 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 And you guys know that I know how to communicate, so that's neither here nor there. But it's not about trying to milk people for everything they have. It's about being able to get the message out. And you know what? I'm just about this. You give me a nice meal, give me lodging, and get me there. And if you can't afford to pay me, that's fine. You do those three things for me, and I'm good to go because I love to eat.
And I love to cook.
Well, there you go. There's a match made. So,
hey, guys, I need to step away and take care of some stuff here. I'll be back in a little bit.
Okay, Michael. Okay. Well, thanks for coming on.
All righty. I'm going to stay logged in. Just,
okay.
I don't know. You know, I never have figured out how to disconnect. Oh, I know. I'll disconnect from Skype, but I'll still be on the chat board.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
I got you.
All right, Ms. Brenda and Ms. Billy, I am going to take off as well. But once again, you guys know I love you to pieces, and keep praying for me.
Ditto. Okay.
All right.
Absolutely. All right. Enjoy the abomination tomorrow night.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have to catch that. All right.
Okay.
I'll talk to you later.
I will talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, it looks like this marriage amendment now is at ahead by 440,000 votes with over 57%. It's got 57% of the counties completely reported and 33% partially reported. So I'm going to say that's probably going to be a winner tonight. So actually two winners for the conservative cause tonight. Here in Indiana and in North Carolina, and you know, Romney, even Rick Santorum not being in the race is coming in a close second, third in most of these races with Ron Paul. So people voting their conscience for the primaries and going with a nominee in November, which is the plan. So, but we'll see. I don't know. Today it was like Romney got on there. Did you see? And he tried to take credit for how I don't know why he does this, but General Motors.
Yeah, well, you know what? This is the thing. He didn't try taking credit for the bailout of the car industry. He tried saying I was right and bailing them out was wrong. And that's what, and it's true. When he said don't bail them out to the government. He said, let them go bankrupt, which they did, after the government gave them $700 million or whatever.
Oh.
But the government gave them the $700 million for nothing more than to cover pension costs. That's it.
Well, that's
insane. The business still needed to go bankrupt. What Romney was saying is don't cover those damn pensions. Don't. It's the union's fault for promising too much. They shouldn't have promised that they'll get their pensions if.
Yeah, but then, you know, that's a catch-22 because, you know, the workers are paying for the company's problem.
You know,
true. But see, that's what happened. Well, what are we doing with the illegal immigrants?
Yeah, which is just insane. I just could not. When I saw that story, I had to make my husband watch it. I said, "You got to watch this because this is just crazy.
It's shameful.
It's
horrific." That's exactly what Romney was promoting. Romney was saying, "I said let them have a manufactured bankruptcy or what is it called?
Structured
bankruptcy."
Yeah.
And that's exactly what ended up happening in the long run after the government gave them $700 million to bail out their pension losses. Because that's why the company was going under.
So you mean our tax dollar was spent just to bail out other people's pensions.
Right. So we made other people keep getting paid for not working.
Lovely.
It's the same thing as what we did for it's what we do for unemployment. It's what we do for welfare altogether. We bail out people who just don't work.
Yeah, and you were saying that one guy, after he was offered the job, didn't want it because it didn't pay enough. Is that what he was saying? He was like,
oh no. Nobody actually ended up giving him an offer. What Hannity did is he brought him on a show and he said, "Okay, sell yourself, basically. Get on the radio, and I want to hear you sell yourself to a business that might be listening to you right now." And
okay.
He's like, and he didn't even know where to begin at first, you know. So Hannity had to like feed him questions. Okay, what's your name? What do you know? What are your skills? He had no skills.
What?
No skills. The guy
how did
had
he not
no
have any skills.
Skills?
He said he had two jobs before that. How can you have no skills?
Exactly. But he couldn't think of any.
Oh, that's insane. You know, it's just crazy.
It's like,
and
give me a job and I'll get skills.
Give me a job and I'll get skills. Yeah, okay. That's not exactly how that works.
I think that was like most of the time he was on the air with Hannity. That's all, like what he kept saying, give me a job.
Well, yeah, but
just
if
give me a job.
You know, you
okay,
can
well,
sell
what are you looking
by,
for?
You know, I'm outgoing. I'm take initiative. You know, those kind of things you can sell yourself with, not necessarily having to have, you know, the job experience, but you know, personality traits that you sell and, you know, to market yourself. And apparently, this guy
exactly.
had never done that. So that's just, you know, it's just sad. And when I saw him, he was kind of disrespectful to Hannity, you know, talking about how he'd rather be down
there. Oh, yeah, I know.
And talking
Hannity's
about
sitting here saying, hey, let me ask the questions. You be the guest.
Yeah.
And he's just like, well, no. You already asked the question. I'm gonna answer it as long as it takes me to answer it, you know.
Oh, that's just – I saw that, and I was just like – it's just kind of sickening, actually, when you think about it. But I did, you know, I was reading a little bit of Thomas Jefferson today, and it was interesting. Just some of his thoughts and letters. You know, when they were first doing the legislature and different things. And in one part, it's talking about the bill for establishing religious freedom, the principles of which had, to a certain degree, been enacted before, and he said, I had drawn in all the latitude of reason and right. It still met with opposition, but with some mutilations in the preamble, it was finally passed, and a singular proposition proved that its protection opinion was meant to be universal. Where the preamble declares that coercion is a departure from the plan of the holy author of our religion, an amendment was proposed by inserting the word Jesus Christ, so that it read a departure from the plan of Jesus Christ, the holy author of our religion. The insertion was rejected by a great majority in proof that they meant to comprehend within the mantle of its protection the Jew and the Gentile, the Christian and Mohammedan, the Hindu and infidel of every denomination. So just some interest. I love reading these letters and his thoughts, you know, because as I'm reading through them, he's talking about how in one point where they were giving speeches on the floor and the guy's like, how can they go on that long? And how can you listen to this? and he replies, you know, just think about if this was a bunch of lawyers. And I'm just thinking about what we have in Washington today,
yeah.
how they go on. And so it's really kind of neat just kind of reading these things that were going on then and how they weren't always in agreement, you know, on the floor, and they had their different people wanting different things, and you know, so it's just really, it gives insight into the whole process. And here they were, you know, newly forming these processes at that point. So, but I would honestly love to have met some of these founding fathers because of the tremendous knowledge and minds that they must have had, you know, because they didn't have the internet like we have today. And Tom, they had to learn from books and, you know, tutors and traveling, and it's just amazing to me when I'm reading his thoughts and some of the similarities and things like that. But some things just, they strike me as I'm going through, and it's like, oh, so that's pretty neat.
I like reading about, you know, some of those who inspired the forefathers, like John Locke.
Mm-hmm. I haven't got to that yet, but I was actually, as I'm standing out there at the polls today, I'm rereading my Constitution, trying to figure out this delegate process. Because now here in Indiana, there were delegates that we could vote for. I didn't know some of them, so I only voted for the ones who I knew, and I left the rest blank because I thought, I'm not going to be responsible for, you know, electing, you know, a Ron Paul delegate or something.
Yeah.
You know, and then they go to state. But this lady I was talking to apparently went down to our state delegation last year, and she said they already had the slate together, and it was an up-and-down vote, and they didn't allow any discussion or anything on the floor. And, of course, you know, she's a Ron Paul supporter. But so I'm trying to figure out, I'm reading the Constitution, trying to figure out, you know, how the delegate process works then. And I didn't really get in-depth in this. And I want to kind of go into that. I want to kind of look at where it was, because actually – the president was voted on by the delegates in Washington, and they were sealed. You know, they voted for a president and a vice president at the same time. Actually what happened is, you know, they voted, and then the two top vote getters, one would be president and the other one would be vice president. You know, there weren't the party systems or anything like that. So I kind of want to research that a little bit, because the way our delegate system is today is just, it's like so confusing, you know?
Right.
I don't know what's going on, and I don't know what Ron Paul's trying to do, but I know his people are, you know, in there becoming delegates all over this country to do what? I don't know exactly. They say to try to change things, but to what is then my next question, because it's like, you know, what, you know, is the ultimate end game of this? Because I believe now that you have to win 5 primaries by popular vote, right, to get on the first ballot. Is that correct? Is that what I was reading before? I wanted to go back and check the RNC rules. There was something about having to win 5, and I don't know if it was the plurality of the votes or the delegates. So I want to do a little more research into that, because those are just some questions that were popping into my head today as, you know, I was having these interesting conversations and just trying to figure out, you know, what in the world are they trying to do, and, you know, what's going to happen with that. But and I know Michael spoke into this before, we do need to start getting more involved and trying to move up the, like, as precinct chairs and in the actual party itself, because those are the people that kind of set the rules, you know, for the RNC, are the people who you know, kind of inch their way, not the delegates themselves, but, you know, establish yourself in the party so that you can have a say in what's going on when they make the rules. But yeah, it's quite interesting, because it's like she was handing out little cards that had, I'm sure they were probably Ron Paul delegates to people. Well, there's, you know, 14 people, but here's some real conservative ones to vote for. And I'm just thinking, okay, those are probably all Ron Paul people, but, you know, I don't know. I just, like I said, I don't know what he's planning to do with those or what the deal's going to actually come out to be with that. So, but anywho, I'm running out of things to say tonight. It's been a long day. We had a beautiful day here today. A lot of sunshine. I think I got a little too much sun standing outside, but good news for a change, I guess, today. So, at least from my perspective, I know you're kind of catch 22 on that, but I can almost.
Yeah. Well, I'm just, you know, I'm worried about the seniority of our committees. Committees are basically, you can't get on a committee without seniority, really, in the Senate and the House. Actually, it's not that you can't, because some people can, but you're more likely to when you have seniority. And when you lose someone who's as senior as, like, Dick Lugar or even Orrin Hatch, what they're doing to Orrin Hatch, kind of like, it makes me realize that, you know, the committees that can change things are not as important, it seems, to the Tea Party. They don't care about the committees. They don't care about even Supreme Court justices so much, because it's those senior political guys that can really get pull.
If they use it, though, in the way that they should, you know. But see,
well,
Senator Lugar was real big.
I don't know about
the
Dick Lugar so much, but I know Orrin Hatch has.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know much about that, what's going on out there. But I know that in our instances, you know, he was called Obama's favorite Republican for a reason. And, even in a debate here, he was talking about, you know, how the disarmament with Russia, you know, and he wanted to finish overseeing what he started. And they weren't either friend or foe, or they weren't our foes. And, you know, just stuff like that, and it's like, I'm really not there with you. Yeah. it's like he's just been there too long, and it really was time. And I wish that he would have just retired, you know, and gone out in that respectful fashion, you know, because he has served Indiana for multiple years, and. And you kind of wish they would, you know, see the writing on the wall, per se. But I do know that Richard Murdoch is for term limits. You know, he's for limited government. He's 60 years old. He's not going in to be a lifetime person. And this is what we got to get rid of, Billy. I know the seniority helps on the committee, but we got to get these people out of there, because they're just making it, they're settling into this life and just using our money like it's growing on trees. And, you know, so you've got to kind of break that up. And there's got to be change in Washington, and that isn't going to happen if we keep electing the same people over and over and over again.
This is the big thing, though. If this Murdoch guy does good by you guys, you're just going to get rid of him because he's been there too long.
Oh, no, he's going to term limit himself. He did that in Indiana. He did two terms as the Secretary of State, and then not Secretary of State, State Treasurer, and then he wouldn't run again because he's not a career politician. And
that's admirable on his part. But
yeah.
The thing is, if things are working, see, what I look at is the clockwork of things, the cogs working together. When things are working and the cog, one of the cogs, isn't damaged, you don't take it out and replace it with a new one just because it's made of titanium instead of copper, you know?
Well, but Washington in and of itself is broken, and anybody who's been there too long is part of the problem. And it's evidence, and you know, I just happened to catch this part of question and answer session with at one of Richard Murdoch's events, where he did say, he said, Senator DeMint told me, he said, we cannot endorse anybody who's running against an incumbent. Now, that's a problem. You know, it's like, it's kind of like the police protect themselves. Doctors, you know, don't like to say bad things about other doctors, you know, this code of silence thing. And we have to break that up. If that's truly how they work in Washington, you know, that's a good old boys club, and that's not working for the good of the people, and that becomes part of the problem. And, you know, because they're supposed to be there doing the will of the people, not, you know, trying to get each other reelected and you know, whatever they're doing up there. I don't know. But, you know, that's my perspective, is that, you know, we need to shake it up big time. We need to, you know, have a massive turnover and just get people, you know, about doing the business of the people, and getting rid of the waste, the government waste and the spending. And actually, Richard Murdoch was talking about he was going to get rid of three departments, and I don't remember which ones they are, but, you know,
well, see,
kind of the same stuff that Herman Cain
was
talking
about.
Being
a new member, he has no say. He won't be able to get rid of anything being a new member.
Well,
he'd have to get on a committee to do it.
Look at Paul Ryan.
Paul Ryan's been there for six terms.
He has?
He had to work his way up.
He doesn't. Well, of course, the House, is it House every 2 years?
Yeah.
So he's been there that
long.
A lot
he's
been
of
there 12
kind
years.
Of like,
he doesn't look that old.
He's 42.
Interesting.
This is he's in his sixth turn. He's going for a seventh.
In the House?
Yeah.
Okay. See, I didn't think he was that old.
Oh, yeah.
Especially what I know. They all look like babies to me. They're getting old here now. So, but yeah.
That's just how it goes, though.
Yeah, I know that's how it goes. But, you know, that's also part of the problem. And we've got to actually make some bold changes, I think, if we're going to actually get the changes that we want, you know. And, I'm hoping that some of these other conservatives across the nation get elected also, so they can at least start working on it. But I don't know. I guess we will wait and see. And I'm going to just take a quick break and play a little song right now for everybody, and we'll be back.
Okay, cool.
Breaks his heart seeing foreign cars filled
one of my favorite Toby Keith songs, Made in America.
We are, I love
American
Toby Keith.
Made. I do too. He's got that quirky, that little bit of bad boy thing going, and I like all that.
And he's got that like cocky attitude about you can't touch me.
Yeah.
He seems like a real softy sometimes.
Yeah. So yeah, I do like him.
And he's an American hero. I mean, the way his songs come out, it's about heroism. It's not about it's modesty versus, you know, bragging.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. And he,
I'm kind of like, you know, how everybody notices how Barack Obama came out with the Bin Laden thing saying, I did this, I did that, I did this. And it comes down to, what did we do?
Yeah.
We the taxpayers who have been sacrificing, we the military who's been dying. What did we do?
Well,
what,
and the thing is,
I.
The thing is, he set it up so that if it failed, he could blame it on the military.
Oh, I know. I remember that, too.
Yeah.
Saying, hey, do it my way, or if you dare step one step out of bounds, it's on you.
Yeah. And they and the call was actually, I think, made by one of the generals or somebody, you know.
General McCraven.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, it wasn't even his call. But, yeah, that irked me when he first came out and said, I got him. It's like, no, you didn't. You did not individually do all the intelligence work. Yeah, and he knew about that intelligence for 9 or 10 months before he did anything with it. I mean, I'm sorry. You know, yeah, there's only so much of that one.
If
you
go over Reagan's speeches, even if you go over Clinton's, rather than I, Clinton even used the word America more than I. He'd say, America has done this. America has done that. Our nation has done this because of this. But it would not be him taking all the credit. When it comes to Reagan, Reagan was like, it's all on you. You guys have made this, you know. He rarely gave himself credit. He did. I don't think he ever did.
Yeah.
Maybe he'd say he'd credit himself with his own quotes, but I always said.
Yeah. Well, and then another thing, you know, I was watching the nightly news with my husband, and I, you know, you were talking about poster child that these Democrats seem to pull out. And this time they were trying to make this sad case about these poor children born in America that had been deported because their mom was brought here as a baby and she didn't know she was illegal. Okay, now wait a minute. You have to have a Social Security number. So if you're illegal, you don't have a Social Security number. So did she ever work? You know? But anyway, you know, they're over there saying, oh, these poor children, they have to go here where they don't speak the language and this and that. You know, it's the poster child thing, you know, trying to get amnesty for these people that came here
illegally.
It's
their pity vote. It's what they want. They play on our compassion. Sure, we feel sorry for kids that, you know, that had no choice. If a mother carries her child in a car seat over that line into America, we do feel sorry for that child. However, we still say, get that child in line.
Right.
Right now, put her in line. You know?
Yes, and yes. But it was like she didn't know she was not legal, but I'm thinking you'd have to know because you have to have a Social Security number to do anything.
Right.
Including filing your taxes.
How did you get a driver's license?
Right. I mean, it actually made more questions in my mind than it did make me feel sorry for her because I'm like, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, if she wasn't here legally, how'd she get a Social Security number? And if she didn't have a Social Security number, she would have known she wasn't here legally. And so, you know, I'm just kind of cynical, I guess, but, you know, it's, sometimes you got to make, it's tough love. Sometimes you got to make the hard decisions in order, you know, for the overall good. And I'm going to use that one in this situation.
How old was she when she gave birth? 14?
Oh, I have no idea. I have no idea, but she had like three kids, and they had them sitting on the couch, and they were asking them questions, you know, oh, it's really hard, and of course, they were smiling the whole time, but now, you know, and then they went on to say there's like hundreds of kids like that now.
Well, I'm just saying, see, when I was 15, and I went to go get my driver's permit, I needed to take my Social Security card with me, I needed to take my birth certificate with me, and boom, you know,
I was able to... We have to have, like, five identifications, you know, to get our kids, a permit.
And from that moment on, my mom gave me my Social Security card to hang on to. Up until then, my mom held on to it.
Yeah. And that was just, you know, I'm sitting there watching that going, you know what? She had to know she was illegal, you know, because she wouldn't have a Social Security number. So this story is so bogus and yet aimed at trying to make people feel sorry for these people that are being deported with their American children. And, you know, if you just solve the problem in the first place, we wouldn't have this problem. You know,
I have a good question for anybody listening. This is important to me. What makes a person American? What is it that, see, to me, I can claim I was born here to an American mother and an American father. So I know that I'm a natural born citizen of America.
Mm-hmm.
What makes her children Americans?
It's just the fact they were born on the soil, supposedly.
I guess.
Because, you know.
So, Being the child of an illegal,
apparently there was no father in
the
picture either because they didn't show a. She's a single mother, so there was. I don't know about the father, you know.
And oops, I should say, oops. I said the I word. I'm a racist.
No.
You've heard that now, right? The I word. Don't say the I word. They're not illegal. They're just undocumented.
No, they're illegal. It's the same thing. You're not here by the law. You're not here with documents. You're
here but then you know what?
It's the same thing.
There's things like that Elizabeth Warren out in Massachusetts, you know, is claiming she was Native American.
Yeah, I heard that.
To get the benefits, or basically to get a leg up at Harvard, because then they had bragging rights over hiring the first Native American professor or whatever.
And it was like
they got all these tax credits over doing so.
And it was like her great grandmother. And that's not enough Indian to get credit because you've got to be, I think, a quarter.
Yeah.
Because
she claimed 132nd. No, you have to be 132nd to get anything, but you get very little. But you still, if a business hires a Native American, they get big-time tax deductions, no matter what. Harvard hired her, got big-time tax deductions. To me, they've committed fraud, even though they didn't do it, she did. But
yeah, well, that is fraud, because that's not
they
really...
should have to pay back all those tax deductions.
I would think so, too. Because, and see, I don't have it documented, but my great-great-great-grandmother was full-blooded Indian, but that's only on hearsay because I haven't actually traced it, and I don't. Nobody.
And that's like me.
One,
my ancestors on my dad's side actually go all the way back to Pocahontas's tribe.
Uh huh.
And then, you know, of course, she was raped by a Frenchman, who then, you know, her offspring became my great 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 whatever, and so. I don't even know how much. Whenever someone says, are you? I'm like, well, I have a story about it, but I don't know, you know?
Well, and the problem becomes because, well, first of all, I got to figure which grandparent it was because I've gotten this story from relatives that I've recently connected with out in Kansas and things, and everybody always talked about, you know, the grandmother that was, you know, full-blooded Indian. And, but if you trace on my grandmother's side, she goes all the way back. And there's French counts, there's King of England, there's all kinds of people. Because hers has been traced way back, you know. And there's all this different mixed blood in there. So how do you actually figure that, you know? Because even though she was born here in America, you know, you start tracing the family back. I think you go back
three generations, and you've got an Irish and a French, you know, parent.
Uh-huh.
And
I can go back one generation or two generations, and I have a full-blooded German grandfather and grandmother.
Uh-huh.
Or, no, my grandmother was full-blooded German. My grandfather was full-blooded Scottish, I think.
Yeah, and see, well, my mom's parents were both, one was from Czechoslovakia and one was from Hungary. So, you know, my mom's a first-generation immigrant, legal immigrant, came through Ellis Island.
Right.
They were registered.
Ellis Island, that's exactly where most of mine, not all of them.
Yeah, and my grandfather, I found his naturalization where he became a citizen. Paperwork, and I don't know if my grandmother did or not, because I didn't find it, so I don't know. But she may have. I have no idea. But anyway, so I am, you know, my mom's full European, so I'm half, but, you know, I can't even trace their records, because the records were all, you know, the war destroyed all the history and records coming out of Hungary.
But the fact is, had my ancestors not registered at Ellis Island, they would have been illegal.
Yes. Yes.
And that was the way that we did it back then. And right now, I wouldn't mind if we had another Ellis Island type thing, so they could at least register to get in line.
Yeah. Yeah, but both of mine came through, I think about 2 or 3 years apart. You know, you can find them on the register there at Ellis Island. Of course, they're both gone, you know, been dead for many, many years. But yeah, then my dad's side, I have no idea. They came some, you know, they were among the founding fathers somewhere in there, you know, when they were all coming
mm-hmm.
in. So I haven't, my dad, I've kind of got it back to one of his, like, my great-great-grandfather, but I don't know who his parents were, so I'm not sure where they came from. You know, they were here in America, and we do have a grandmother that was Indian, so probably Cherokee, I'm guessing, because down in Alabama, although it could be Creek, you know, but... interesting history, and I know we're probably boring everybody to death. I'm sorry, people. My mind is just in slow gear today. It's been a long day, but an exciting day for us here in Indiana, as we worked really hard to get Richard Murdoch elected as our Republican representative to run against the Democrat in the fall. The Democrats are happy too, because they think they might have, they could. Nobody could ever beat Lugar. Nobody ever wanted to run against him. It was a big family name here in our state. But I can almost guarantee you we're going to go back Republican this year because of Obama. We had not actually elected a Democratic president in many, 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 many years. And I'm not really sure that we did this past time either. But anyway, you have any closing thoughts for us, Billy? Your show's going to be on tomorrow, you said?
Yep, tomorrow night and Thursday. I'm reworking it, and I'm going to have, like, an Express Yourself hour.
Okay.
Where, like, the first hour, I'm going to do a lot of talking and basically ranting about all the abominations and stuff, and then I'm just going to have the second hour be call in and Express Yourself. And talk about whatever either the headlines I talked about or something new.
Okay. And that's airing at what time?
9 p.m. tomorrow, Central Time.
9 p.m. Central. So that's 10 p.m. Eastern. Okay. Try to get that straight in my head. And as usual, ladies, Women Patriots airs on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. 8 p.m. Central time, and we have Soldiers of, did they rename their show? Is it still Soldiers of Patriotism?
It's Soldiers of Patriotism now. It was Santorums, but now it's Soldiers of Patriotism again.
Okay, and they're on Sundays?
Yep, Sundays at 3 p.m. Central time.
Okay.
And then red, bright, and blue we have on Saturdays at 1 p.m. Central Time.
Okay, and those are all of
our... And Liberty Suns.
And Liberty Suns, I think, is taking a break for the summer. I think that's the email I got from Michael. And then so many good shows out there, but we were...
But right now I'm going to be simulcasting on Own the Narrative. You can go to ownthenarrative.com and just get involved with them, and they'll be able to simulcast your show so you can get a bigger listener base and stuff.
Okay. Which sounds good, although I don't know if we're going into summer.
I listened to them two times now. And they're interesting guys, but they really don't talk much politics. They talk life.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Basically, like, one of them, Justin, he's the one who basically started the website and stuff. He has a... he's looking for a new job, so to speak. He's working at a university as a professor. He wants to, you know, get out of the public sector and get into the private sector, that kind of stuff. You know, they were talking about last night basic IT stuff, you know, what they're doing with the website and what they're going to do and how, you know, they're going to expand it and stuff.
Okay. Well, yeah, if I talked about my life, you guys think I was making it up.
Nah. Oh, no, believe me. You know what?
It's the biggest
I'll never, ever
want to hear.
I would never, ever doubt anybody's life story because guess what? Mine is unbelievable sometimes. Like I said, you know, I find it hard to believe. I even question my aunt, it's my cousin, one of my cousins that goes really into the genealogy and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And she traced my dad's family back to the... you know, the tribe of Pocahontas.
Yeah.
And she's like, and I'm like, yeah, right. You know, you're full of baloney. And she's no, seriously.
I'm related to Lady Godiva. And Booker T. Washington. So, you know.
Oh, wow.
You know, I've got, and that's on my grandmother's side. There's some interesting connections that come about there. But, you know,
Lady Godiva, huh?
Yeah, wow.
Just don't be riding any horses through
side.
The street naked.
Yeah, it's like, well, we wondered where we got that wild streak from. You know? Okay.
Oh, a nudist colony's coming our way.
Yeah, no. That's not going to happen. That would just, you know, scare people. But but yeah, it's just like, oh, with, you know, my children, my seven children, and it would be, it's something interesting. But so anyway, I think I'll stick to politics and maybe history, maybe a little bit of health. We didn't really get into any health questions tonight. Usually we have a little bit of something healthy going on, but I can't even think of anything healthy at this point.
Well, you know, once we talk Obamacare, we can't stop.
Oh, I know. Don't even get me going on that one. I'm just like, oh, man. And then, you know, I read where I think he's been threatening the Supreme Court again with, you know, cutting Medicare if they don't rule in his favor or something I was reading. I just haven't had time to really look at it, so can't really speak heavily to that, but I'm thinking, okay.
I have a serious question for you, and it is a health-related question.
Okay.
But just recently, it just started a couple weeks ago, like, I wear tennis shoes, or I call them tennis shoes, but, you know, sports shoes when I go out sometimes, and then when I take them off, my feet are dented, literally dented with all the laces and stuff like that on them. And it doesn't go away for a long time. And I was wondering what that means. My husband literally looked at my foot and said, "You, it looks to me like you got beriberi." I'm like, what? Beriberi's like a African disease.
Huh. But there's no swelling or anything in your feet?
No. It's just, it swells back out eventually, but hours later. And they are swollen a little bit. And I was told... a couple years ago, it was a B1 deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been taking B1 tablets for a long time. And I don't know if I need to up my dose or something, but...
I don't know, but you're not diabetic or have diabetes running in the family or
I haven't
anything
been,
like that.
Well, my grandmother was diabetic, but I haven't been diagnosed with it yet. You know, I've gone to the doctor 4 or 5 months ago.
Yeah, because that's usually your skin trigger, and usually it should pop back pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So, but if you've got quite a bit of swelling in there, you know, that may be part of what's going on with that. But what would be causing the swelling, you know, could be any number of different things. So, but
well, it's just weird, though, when my husband tells me, you got beriberi. I'm like, no, I don't.
And beriberi. No, if it's matching the eyelids on your shoe, I don't think it's beriberi. So I think you're okay.
Beriberi, I was always told, was like a South African malnourishment disease.
Yeah, I don't even really know, but I'm pretty sure you don't have beriberi. So, it sounds like a circulatory thing to me. So,
it does to me, too, but
yeah,
I just thought I'd ask as long as I had you on the phone because I looked at my foot, and I can still briefly see some imprints on it.
Oh, really? Huh.
Yeah.
So, oh, interesting. Yeah, I'd say that's more of a circulatory problem. Whether it's related to the vitamin B deficiency, I wouldn't be able to tell you that, but, you know, I'm going with that one.
Okay.
Okay, well, thanks, Billy, for spending some time with me. Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Padre Thomas, for calling in. Thanks to all our listeners. We'll try to have a little more preparation for the show next week. We'll be on at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central. And thanks for joining us. And feel free to call in, you know, and... We're willing to talk just about anything you want to talk about on this show. Even Lady Godiva.
Exactly.
On
you know, we're
porch.
Talking about beriberi.
And beriberi. And all kinds of good stuff. And
there you go.
With that, I'm going to wish you all a good night. And we had a couple good victories today. North Carolina did pass their marriage amendment bill. And we got Richard Murdoch, a very good conservative running for the Senate here in Indiana. So everybody take care. And with that, I'm going to say good night.
Good night.
Thanks again, Billy.
Okay. No problem. Bye.
All right. Bye.